ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयं नमामि भगवत्पादम् शङ्करं लोकशङ्करं शङ्करं शङ्कराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने दक्षिणामूर्तये ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम् यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तन्न विदुःसुरः सुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः Chapter 13, let us recite the first two verses. First, Arjuna Uvacha Prakritim Purusham Chaiva Kshetram Kshetrajna Mevacha एतद् वेदितुमिच्छामि ज्ञानं ज्ञेयं च केशव श्रीभगवानुवाच इदं शरीरं कौन्तेय क्षेत्रमित्यभिधीयते एतद्यो वेत्ति तं प्राहुः क्षेत्रज्ञ इति तद्विदः Although we discussed these verses in the last session, they are very important verses of Bhagavad Gita and Vedanta, so we thought that we will again review them this time. What Lord Krishna teaches in this first verse actually, idam shariram kaunteya kshetram iti abhidhyate. Lord Krishna says, hey kaunteya, hey Arjuna. So Arjuna also is called Kaunteya, son of Kunti. He is called Pandava also, son of Pandu. Kaunteya, son of Kunti. Just for your information. It's not only by the father's name that the son is known, by mother's name also the son is known. So Arjuna is known as Kaunteya because of his mother's name. And there is always a reason why given, that should generally be the reason why a given name is mentioned. So because he's son of Kunti, that Kunti is some kind of a grass which is very sharp, and therefore the one who possesses a sharp intellect also can be called Kaunteya. Here Lord Krishna in this verse teaches what we call viveka or discrimination, separation, which is very important in our life, because there prevails avivika, non-separation. Separation between two things which are so intimately mixed up that where there are two, there appears to be one. And therefore, our inability to see the two as two and thinking that there is only one thing there is a kind of aviveka, non-discrimination, inability to separate the two. The standard example that is given is that of a red-hot iron ball. Take an iron ball, it is round in shape, black in color, cold to touch. Put that iron ball in a furnace, heat it, becomes red hot. Now its appearance has changed altogether. Because what has happened is, now that the fire is united with iron, or iron and fire are united with each other, and therefore we have an entity called fireball, which is a union of two entities, iron and fire. So there are two. However, a person doesn't know what is iron or what is fire, may think that this is one entity, namely fireball. He may think that it is this ball that burns, iron that burns. Thus, inability to recognize two as two, and taking as one where in fact two exist, is aviveka, meaning viveka means discrimination or separation. The word viveka is derived from the root which, prathakkarane, in the sense of separation. So viveka means prathakkaranam, to separate. Now something like this also prevails in our life. And that aviveka, inability to separate the two, whether there are two, know them as two, and take them to be one, creates a lot of problems in our life. Our body-mind sense complex that we have is also like similar to that red-hot iron ball. With this body, sense organs, mind, this personality, the complex that we have, which appears to be sentient, alive, is naturally taken to be the self, because we take to be the self that which is sentient, which is conscious. So this body appears to be conscious, possessing consciousness. The mind appears to possess consciousness. The sense organs appear to possess consciousness. The body displays life, which cannot be without consciousness. The eyes see, they illumine the color and form. The ears illumine the sounds. And thus, these organs of perception illumine the respective objects. That cannot be unless they possess consciousness. See, a lamp can illumine a part cannot illumine another part. There is some difference between a lamp and a part. Lamp possesses light whose nature it is to illumine. whereas the pot doesn't possess that. Similarly also we find this table, it doesn't have life. The table, chair, all these kind of objects of the world, mountains, rivers, they don't have life. They don't have sentience. And so we never take them to be Atma ourselves. However, this body has life. It has sentience. It's something different from table and chair. And then it is natural for us to take this body which displays consciousness. The eye see. You know, the telescope doesn't see. Microscope doesn't see. Understand? Because they don't possess consciousness. Eyes see. Telescope sees only with the help of eyes. Microscope sees with the help of eyes. They don't see independently because they don't have life. The eyes possess life. Therefore possesses consciousness. And therefore we take the eyes, ears, all the organs of perception as possessing consciousness. Body as possessing consciousness. Look at our mind. It also objectifies, illumines, brings various perceptions to us. So mind also is a conscious entity. The body is a conscious entity. Sense organs are a conscious entity. The mind is a conscious entity. It is natural that we take the body, sense organs, mind as a self, as Atma, because I know that I am a conscious being. This much I know, that I am a conscious being. The body is conscious. Sense organs are conscious. Mind is conscious. Therefore, I possess this opinion that the body is myself. I am the body. I am the sense organs. I am the mind. This is habitual. I am born with this kind of a notion, understanding. That I am the body, I am the sense organs, I am the mind. See, we have been talking about ignorance yesterday. And here, what is the nature of that ignorance? We have been saying yesterday how ignorance creates likes and dislikes, how ignorance creates a sense of smallness or inadequacyness, how that in turn creates likes and dislikes. And how in turn that creates all kinds of conflicts in our life. See, yesterday we discussed how likes and dislikes are a cause of conflict, because I as an individual possess my likes and dislikes, another person possesses his or her likes and dislikes. Now when these two persons come in contact with each other, it is one bundle of likes and dislikes coming in association with, interacting with another bundle of likes and dislikes. Sometimes the chemistry matches. The likes and dislikes, this bundle A and bundle B seem to be in harmony. There is a wonderful relationship. Sometimes that is not so. That chemistry does not match and then there is conflict. Unfortunately, there's more conflict in our life than harmony. And that is why a necessity to deal, to remove that conflict. It is that mismatch of these two bundles of likes and dislikes which causes conflicts and all the problems in our life. No reason, but that's what it is. All psychologists, therapists, everybody is trying to remove this conflict by counseling and stuff like that. However, everybody takes for granted that this individual possessing likes and dislikes, he's a real person, that my desires are real. My likes and dislikes are real. That is taken for granted. That the person with whom I'm interacting, that person has his or her likes and dislikes. They are all real. Now what do we do with that? Then they will show some practical methods of, you know, how to interact and when to create distance, when to do what various things. Vedanta inquires, not inquires, and reveals tells us, even the very cause of likes and dislikes says that likes and dislikes also have no reason to be there. We just take for granted that likes and dislikes are real, desires are real. That's how psychology begins. Vedanta says that these likes and dislikes, the desires arising from a sense of inadequacy, incompleteness really, are not legitimate. This is a very important thing. Therefore, Swami says, psychology cannot solve the problem and Vedanta does not see a problem. Psychology cannot solve the problem. You cannot solve the problem when you take as real what is not real. If the likes and dislikes that I possess, if the opinions I have about myself are real, if my sense of limitedness, sense of individuality was real, then of course you will provide solution accordingly. But they're not real. And taking them to real, then psychology seeks to solve the problem. You cannot solve a problem which is not there. Vedanta says, because my sense of limitedness is not a reality about me. My sense of inadequacy is not a reality about me. It is a notion that I am entertaining and not a reality about me. Swamiji, if it's not a reality, how can I entertain the notion? It can happen. The Vedanta's famous example of rope snake. That what is lying in front of me is a piece of rope. But because of inadequate lights or some other factors, I mistake it to be a snake. Not very unusual in our life to mistake one thing for the other. It's not unusual. Some people or sometimes we mistake one person for the other. So recently I was visiting Salt Lake City. There is a real example. I shouldn't say the name, but just it comes to me. So I told my host, I said, you lost weight. You know? I think I'm very perceptive person and, you know. So then he looks at me, Swamiji, are you sure you're not confusing me with this ex-advisor who also comes to the ashram? He says, many people have come to me thinking that I'm that person. I'm not telling name. If the persons are present, I cannot tell the name. Then in my mind I compare, I said, looks like it, you know. I think I mistook one person for the other. And I was so smart in saying, I think you lost it. I tried to impress him, you know. It happens. Because appearance, height and things can be similar. This is not only you, Swamiji. Other people also have done, and has happened to other people also. One day somebody came and started congratulating me and thanking me profusely. I couldn't understand. It turned out the other person had done things for that person, you know, and I got all the compliments. So it's not unusual that we mistake one thing for the other. Not unusual. Sometimes voice is also on the telephone. Before the other person announces, I say, hello, how are you? This is, when did you come? So what are you asking, Swamiji? And I realize that I have mistaken the voice. I thought it was this person talking, and in fact it's somebody else talking. Not unusual. That is what Shankaracharya draws our attention to in the Adhyasa Bhasha. It's not unusual that in our life we take one thing for the other. Not unusual. You may not have taken a rope to be a snake, that may or may not have happened to everybody. But one person described an experience to me. It was a real experience. This person was visiting some place, it's in India. One morning he woke up early morning, it's not clear daylight yet. He opened the door to go out to take a walk, and he saw in front of him, right in the street, in the center, a big cobra, like this, a huge cobra. He was scared, closed the door. Didn't go for a walk that morning. And later on somebody said, what happened to you? You wanted to go for a walk. He said, no, today I decided not to go for a walk. But I thought that you opened the door. What happened to you? That person persisted. So this person had to say, look, and opened the door, I saw a huge cobra right in front of me. So let us see what is that. They opened the door. Now there was daylight. You know what it was? Some construction workers are working. There a huge pile of sand and stuff like that. In that they inserted opposite. That what you call a shovel. You know the shovel? Shovel is like that. They inserted with the handle in the sand. And this thing, that literally this person took it to be a cobra. No, this is an actual experience, and I'm not making it up. The idea is that it's not unusual that we take one thing for the other. And something like that is happening in our life. That's what Vedanta points our attention to. What is Vedanta means? Upanishads, I said last night. Look, you are taking one thing for the other. This body, sense organs, mind, that is not you. You are not the body. You are not the mind. You are not the sense organs. You are distinct from them. Now, not knowing that distinction, and taking, what's wrong with you, Swami? Suppose I'm not the body, I take the body with myself, what's the big deal? It's a big deal. Because the poor body has a birth, body has death, body grows, matures, declines, perishes. This is how the body goes through various changes from birth to death. It is the nature of body to change. It is nature of body to decay. It's the nature of body to disintegrate. So what, Swami? But when I take the body to myself, it means that I think I was born. What's wrong with that? Nothing wrong with birth. But the problem is, I know very well that whatever is born is going to die, because I see that all the time around me, that whatever is born, whoever is born, is going to die. That I know. That means I am going to die. What's wrong with that, Swami? But I cannot accept death. I know I am going to die, and death is something I cannot accept. I want to be alive. I do not want my existence to be erased, because I love to be. I am born with a natural, inherent love for being, for life, and I have no love for death. Unless some problem happens in my mind, it can happen. For whatever reasons, it may happen that all of a sudden my mind turns and I love death. But that is something abnormal, not normal. People who commit suicide, something abnormal happens because of painful experiences of life, because there is no hope in life at all. And therefore they want to end the life, not because they want to end their existence, because they want to end the pain. But I love to be. But then I love to be a pleased self. Now I just not don't want to only be, but I want to be a pleased self. So when if it happens to somebody, there is no possibility of ever being a pleased self. That's how the person in that state of mind determines. There's no hope for happiness. There's no hope for the pain to go. In that case, a person seems to end the life. Not because there is love for liking for ending the life, because a person wants to be free from pain. So That I cannot accept. Taking the body to be a self means I am mortal being, and there is a conflict between what I like and what I find myself to be. I find myself to be a mortal being, a changing being. And particularly when I go over the hill, up to the hill it's okay. Whatever that hill is, I think 30 years. After 30 years, go over the hill. Depends on what profession you are in. If a sports person, maybe 20 years, 22 years, 24. Swami is already 26. 26, young man. No. In tennis, 26 is already old. So Federer, you know. Swami is 27 years old. What's the big deal? No. But this Nadal is only 22 years old. That makes a difference. So poor Fed is already over the hill, is gone. He must be regretting, why am I 27? What if I have been 22, 18, 9, 17? So we don't like this, that I'm growing old. Over the hill. Swami, now I can't remember. I'm already in the class. As soon as I walk out of the class, nothing remains in my mind. So when they ask me, what did Swami teach? I don't know, I can't tell them anything. Loss of short-term memory. We can't recollect what we want. The verse doesn't occur. The word does not occur. The tip of my tongue, it's in my heart but not here. Something like that. All old age, the hair turning grey, how much we struggle. Wrinkles coming, struggle. Because of that, so many billions of dollars of industry, of cosmetic industry. There's nothing right or wrong about that. Let it be. Do that. I don't suggest that you maintain wrinkles on your face. Do what you want to do. Look good, no problem. Nothing wrong in looking good. That's all right. Wrong is a problem I have with myself. As Swami points out, that when there are wrinkles, you apply the cream, so wrinkles don't appear. But the cream is effective for 3 hours. So go to a party, because parties last that long. Sometimes they last longer than that. And then you are concerned, worried, what's happening to you. So every 15 minutes, this lady takes from her purse, takes out that mirror, looks at that. Says, you can conceal your wrinkles, but you cannot conceal your knowledge of the wrinkles, because you have that, know that I have wrinkles. Suffering, this is suffering. Mental agony. That's why I said Buffalo is no problem. No cosmic industry in Buffalo. Buffalo doesn't want to change the color. If Michael Jackson wants to change his color, I don't know what all he went through. Buffalo is no problem. Because except, you know, black or whatever the color is. We have all kinds of problems. Swami says, the moment I take the body to be myself, every part of the body creates complex. Beginning from hair, the color of hair, the quantity of hair, presence or absence of hair, beginning from there, to eyelashes, to the color of the eyes. Today, I was looking at New York Times and there's a picture of a girl who has so many kinds of contact lenses. Now there are lenses which make your eyes look bigger than they are. Nothing wrong in that. Do what you want. Problem is, I suffer from that. Problem is a complex that I don't have beautiful eyes. No, that is a problem. So eyes can be a problem. Eyelashes are a problem. So many people are making their living on dealing with eyelashes, plucking the hair, putting, what is the, I don't know, but things like that. Swami used to tell that story, you know. He married a lady in Calcutta, an Indian woman in Calcutta. In 4 years, she built a big house. What did you do? What are you doing? I'm a beautician. What do? I just plug the hair. That's all she does. In a few years, you built a house? All of this, as I said, I have no problem or objection to anything. We respect and we support everything. The problem is the suffering. You can change your eyelashes, but then I can't accept myself with the eyelashes. Self-non-acceptance. Because of my hair, self-non-acceptance. Eyelashes, self-non-acceptance. Nose. From the nose you can make out which race this fellow belongs to, whatever, problem. Lips are a problem, teeth are a problem, ears are a problem, height is a problem, weight is a problem, and what else I don't even know, so many things can be problems. Feet can be problem. So Chinese wear those kind of shoes which, I don't know, they want their feet to be small. And then so very proudly, Swamiji, no, my chappals you can't wear, your feet are too big. Okay, thank you. So moment you identify with the body, every part of the body creates complex, and every complex is a source of my suffering. Human being suffers, poor thing, That is what Vedanta addresses. Nothing else. Vedanta doesn't care what you do. Don't suffer, that's all. Because suffering is illegitimate. If there's a reason for suffering, then it's okay. Nobody can help it. If I was my body, nobody can deny that fact that you are born, you're going to die. It's a fact. But if I was my body, and death was my attribute, I would not oppose and resist it also, because, as I said, we have no difficulty in accepting what is natural. If death was a natural thing for me, I would be comfortable dying also. But I'm not. And poor body is limited in time, limited in place, limited in attributes. He also wants to give a lecture, Thus, our body-mind complex is like that red iron ball, and the consciousness that the body displays doesn't belong to the body. The consciousness, the sense organs and the mind they display, that doesn't belong to them. It is the borrowed consciousness. Just as the round iron ball, the heat doesn't belong to the iron ball. The red color doesn't belong to iron ball. It's all borrowed from fire. Suppose fire had a mind, It's good that only human being has mind, as I said yesterday. Nobody else has a mind. Therefore, they're all predictable. They have no complexes. And therefore, when there's no complex, they're predictable. Only a person who has complex is not predictable. You never know what kind of complex exists at that time in the mind. No complex, predictable. So dog has no complex. You can predict how dog will behave. Throw a biscuit, dog will run. Throw a ball, it will run. Ask your child, bring the ball. Why? Come on, bow down to Swamiji. Nothing doing. You train your dog to bow down, they do. The dog was trained, in Ahmedabad ashram. So whenever Swami used to go, that female dog, she would always lie down on the floor and do whatever it is. It was trained. But not that person's son who trained the dog. The dog will do. But his daughter won't do that. His daughter won't do that. Thus we entertain so many complexes, and therefore we are unpredictable, even to our own self. Thus, human suffering is not legitimate. There is no reason to suffer. And taking suffering to be real, whatever kind of means we employ to remove the suffering, it's not going to work, because what is not real, you can't remove it.
Ajnanena avritam jnanam tena muhyanti jantavah.
Bhagavad Gita says in the 5th chapter, Ajnanena avritam jnanam. This knowledge of mine that I am Brahman, avritam, is veiled, is covered. Ajnanena, by ignorance. The knowledge of my true nature is veiled by ignorance. Tena muhyanti jantavah. And therefore, people entertain all kinds of wrong notions about themselves. This is where the problem is to be solved. Then all topical problems will be solved. Vedanta draws our attention. So there are two kinds of problems. One is the fundamental problem. Other is the topical problem. What is topical problem? The problem that we have in our day-to-day life. Swami, this person doesn't talk to me, doesn't behave properly, doesn't do this. There are topical problems. I made some money, I lost some money, I built a house, So these situations in life that seem to be problematic to us, all situations can become problem. Vedanta says that there is no reason why any situation has to become a problem. What do you mean, Swami? You don't know the stock market, you don't know what a wealth I had in 2007 and what do I have now? That need not become a cause for sadness. Nothing whatever, really, that's what Vedanta explains. Bhagavad Gita says, even death need not become the cause of sadness. Let alone somebody's death. Arjuna is grieving for somebody's death. Even our own death need not become a cause of sadness. Because there is no such thing as death as far as Atma is concerned. So Vedanta does not see any problem anywhere at all. At the same time, moment we give reality to the problem, no problem can be solved also. We can sort of work out things and make some rules at all times. This is your space, this is my space. This is what you do. So all these arrangements can be done and we can live life. But that is not a solution to the problem, because I am the problem to myself. How do I become the problem to myself? I, who look upon myself as a mortal being, a limited being, an ignorant being, is a problem to myself. Meaning, the wrong perception that ignorance brings about is the problem that we have. Well, why do we take body to myself? Because body, see, this is what, why has God done like this, Swamiji? And that is, we have to go and ask him. Why did he do this? Why are you born with ignorance? I don't know. Not only we are born ignorant, but then we take this body-mind complex to ourselves. That's a bigger problem. You see, when we are fast asleep, for example, at that time also we are ignorant, but we have no problem because at that time we have no complex, no identification. I don't have any sense of individuality. There is no identification of the body-mind complex. I have no knowledge of myself, nor I have knowledge of the world, and therefore ignorance is bliss. In the deep sleep state, I enjoy bliss. Moment I wake up, identify the body, all problems begin. So understand this. Why the first verse being told in this 13th chapter? Very important. These two verses of the chapter, for 13th chapter is the whole Vedanta. That is really what Vedanta is. Everything else is preparation for Vedanta. Idam shariram kaunteya kshetram iti abhidhyate. Lord Krishna says, hey Kauntya, Hey Arjuna, idam shariram, this body, which also includes the sense organs, includes the mind also. This body, mind, sense complex. Hey Arjuna, kshetram iti abhidhyate, it is kshetram, it is anatma, it is non-self. It is not you. Yetadyo vetitam prahu kshetrajna iti tadvidaha. There is the one who objectifies the body. One who is aware of this body-mind complex is the self. So here we are told this what we call viveka or discrimination. How to separate the two because they appear to be one. The body itself appears to be self. So how to recognize that? How to recognize that the body is not myself? I am not the body. I am not the sense organs. I am not the mind. Suppose we recognize Swami, what will that do? That means that then I will not judge myself based on my body. Right now I am constantly judging myself that I am so and so based on what my body is. Swami, I am a short person. I am a tall person. I am a dark person. I am a fair person. Whatever. Each one is a problem. If you are tall, then also is a problem. Generally tall people, I mean, are lucky, you may say. But no, when they are among short people, they make fun of this tall fellow. A palm tree is coming, something like that they say, you know. If you are short, then also is a problem. When you are with the tall people, then is a problem. A tall has a problem with a tall person also, because then you have an inch difference and they'll stand, you know, who is taller. Thus, this body, identification, body is not a problem. Self also is not a problem. What's the problem? Taking the body to be Atma. Taking body to be the self is a problem because that creates in me all this notion that I am just equal to this body, nothing more. This poor body is a small, insignificant entity, and therefore I look upon myself as an insignificant creature. Then I struggle to become significant all the time. So human being struggles for what? Being significant. Draw attention of everybody, try to prove oneself, and all kinds of things we try to do. Why? Because I am suffering from this notion that I am insignificant. If you were insignificant and trying to be insignificant, then understandable. But you are not insignificant, that's the thing. Unfortunately also, I can never become significant. The manner in which I am trying to become significant at the level of body, there is no way I can become. However, we have this, now Gurukulam also has a gymnasium, a gym. So the other day Ravi demonstrated all the machines that are there. All kinds of things you do. It's good watching. I did not indulge in any one of those things. It was nice to watch. And so every day you go and do this. It's good to do. But if you think that by doing that you are going to become significant, forget about it. It's good to have a healthy body. But by bringing about some change in the body, I'll become significant. It's not going to happen. All you just need is somebody who spends 3 hours a day, you spend 1 hour a day, he has bigger muscles, that's all. One punch is enough. This beautiful library, you go and study and get all kind of knowledge, that is good. But if you think that by learning all these things, there are people whose business it is to know everything. There are people. If you talk about a resort in South Africa, he knows about that. Some forest in East Africa, he knows about that. Some animal in Australia, everything this person knows. I don't know how much time the person is spending and what is it. A whole day you are with computer, internet and this and that. But if you think that by all this kind of information you are going to become significant, that will not happen. You can never become omniscient, all-knowing. I can become mighty, never almighty. I can become knowledgeable, but never all knowledge. The idea is that the way we are trying to solve our problem insignificance, that is doomed to failure. And that's the big problem of disappointment and frustration, because I don't seem to achieve what I'm seeking in life. I don't even know what I'm seeking in life, but what I'm seeking actually is to be significant, to be perfect, to be almighty, omniscient. Vedanta says, just relax. You don't need to do all those things, because you are not what you take yourself to be. All your struggle is based on your perception of yourself. First of all, examine whether your perception of yourself is legitimate, is true or not. Vedanta says, your perception of yourself is not true. You are not what you take yourself to be. Meaning that you are not a small, insignificant creature. Idam shariram kaunteya kshetram ityabhidhiyate. Kshetram ityabhidhiyate. Hey Kaunteya, this body is kshetram, is anatma, is non-self, is not you. That should come to us as a great relief, really. You know what it means? It means that the limitations that the body has are not your limitations. The birth of the body is not your birth. The death of the body is not your death. Changes of the body are not your changes. If that is very clear, then it doesn't matter what the body is. Right now, for example, a tree is growing, suppose the tree falls, doesn't happen to me, I haven't fallen, the tree has fallen. A few branches of tree are cut, they're not, my hands are not cut. How objective we are when it comes to a tree, unfortunately, that objective doesn't remain when it comes to this body. Although there's not much difference between body and the tree, as far as their category is concerned, the tree also is an object of knowledge, and body also is an object of knowledge. I'm a knower of the tree, I'm also aware of the body, as much as I'm aware of the tree. Therefore, this tree is kshetra, is object of knowledge, object of awareness. Similarly also, this body is the object of awareness. So, why does Lord Krishna say, this says that this body is kshetram? This body is object awareness. Is not the table object awareness also? The whole world is object awareness. But then fortunately, you have no problem with the world. Meaning that, even in mistake also, I never say I am the table. If I say, then I have to go I will be taken someplace else. Like this man who had this complex, then I am a cat, you know. I don't know how that complex happened. This man thought he's a cat. You can't solve that problem. He was taken to a therapist. Therapist is a very smart person. Says, are you a cat? Who do you think you are? I'm a cat. Who am I? Therapist says, who am I? Oh, you are a human being. Are you sure? Yes. Okay. So one step, you know, is accomplished. Then the therapist orders for a big mirror. A mirror is brought. This man who thinks he's a cat, he's asked to look in the mirror. What do you see inside? I see myself. Look at me. Yes, I look at you. Who am I? You're a human being. What about the entity that appears in the mirror? It's a human being. Who am I? Human being. What's the reflection? Human being. Whose reflection is that? That is mine. So are you a human being or a cat? No, I'm a human being. Therapist, you know, was very happy. Says, do you realize that you're not a cat, you're a human being? Yes. Thank you. Very happily, the man went back. After 3 days, the relatives again called this therapist. Says, this fellow doesn't go out of the house. Why? Because you're afraid of dogs? therapist says, wait a minute, I only convinced him that he's not a cat. So again the man is called. Again the same exercise, you know. He says, yes, I have no problem, I'm a man, I'm not a cat. Why didn't you go out then in the street? What's the problem? He says, I know I'm not the cat. How do you know dogs know that I'm not the cat? This is, I don't know if such a thing is possible or not, but if that, unusually it can happen that one may take oneself to be all kinds of things. People see things that are not there and they talk to air and, so that is, we are not talking about that kind of a thing. So we are not, fortunately, we are not complex that I'm the microphone, or I'm the table, or I'm the floor, otherwise every time you walk on the floor I'll scream. That's not the case. I have a problem that I take this body to be myself, even though the table and the body are not too different in terms of, in the fact, in as much as body also is an object of awareness, table also is an object of awareness. Since we, when it comes to body, this viveka or discrimination goes away, therefore Lord Krishna says, idam shariram kauntya kshetram iti abhidhyate. He kauntya, this body is kshetram, is an atma, is non-self. Etadyo vetti, one who is aware of this body. Tamprahu kshetrajnya iti tadvidaha. Tadvidaha, the wise people call the knower of the body as kshetrajnya, as a self. So then here is a complex which is a union of self and non-self, atma and atma. So the two entities, we take them to be one. Like the red hot iron ball is one entity. Two entities, we take them to be one because we do not know the iron and fire. So we require a teacher to tell us that look, the round shape belongs to iron. Whereas red color belongs to fire. The heat also belongs to fire. Then you separate the two. Where do you separate them? In your mind. The separation doesn't have to take physically take place, in your mind it takes place. So in the mind you know that the round shape belongs to the iron, the red color and heat belong to fire. Then that's fine. Then you won't say the iron has burned me, although we say sometimes, Swamiji, what happened this morning? I was burned by tea. I drank tea, very hot tea. My tongue is burned. But tea does not burn. What burns? Fire burns. What we are drinking is a combination of tea and fire. Tea does not burn. The fire burns. Water does not burn. Fire burns. Similarly also, the body is not conscious. The atma is conscious. But then how come the body appears to be conscious? Just as an iron ball appears to be red and hot because of association with fire, so also the body in association with consciousness appears to be a conscious entity. And therefore, we mistake it to be the self. As long as this mistake or error continues, you know, samsara cannot be solved regardless of what is done. This is what they say is a fundamental human problem. Of taking the body-mind complex as myself, as a result, I suffer from this complex of being inadequate, insignificant. And therefore, I have this perception of myself as inadequate, and that makes me a needy person. That's what creates likes and dislikes, and that's what creates all problems in the life. A person who is free from likes and dislikes has no problem, really. Swami, what if his job goes down? No problem. Suppose there is no likes and dislikes. You know what it means? Somebody has no likes and dislikes, what does it mean, you know? Oh, Swami, that must be a very dull person. Even no likes and no dislikes at all. Nothing turns him on. No kick in life. People say philosophically, Swamiji, how can you appreciate happiness without unhappiness? So sorrow also is required in life, then alone can appreciate what happiness is. He says, no. If you have no likes, no dislikes, no reactions, then what are you? You are a cheerful, happy, contented person. You are a pleased self. These likes and dislikes only stifle the manifestation of pleased self. If the likes and dislikes are neither, you are pleased with what, Swami? With yourself. That's all we need to do. Just get rid of likes and dislikes and we become what? The pleased self. And you don't have to wait for infinity. Swami, when will these likes and dislikes go? Remove one like and dislike. Little pleased self comes out. Second like and dislike. Little. So therefore the reward is immediate. It's called drishta phalam, you know? Immediate reward. So a person who has no likes and dislikes, no attachment aversions, no demands, no expectation. He has no problem in life with nobody. You don't know, Swami, who I am stuck with, you have no idea. Even then, really. You see, for example, you have no problem with, let us say, a person who is mad, person who has some problems, physical problems, all, you know, children have problems. As long as there's somebody else's children, we have no problem. You have problem? You're all compassionate and everything else. Well, because my wife, my child, my something, then there's a big problem. Because problem is not there. I transfer that problem to I. That is where it becomes a problem. Even death is not a problem as long as it belongs to somebody else. Somebody dies, not a problem. My house is right on the street. Every day I see the death procession going, you know, people carrying Ram, Jai Ram, Ram Ram, etc. Every day you see. It's a usual thing. Only in that procession sometimes you find people familiar to you. Wait a minute, where are these fellows going? Then I check with somebody. You know, Swamiji, our dear friend, this fellow is gone. Then something happens to me because I get connected. So because of likes and dislikes, they connect me with everything. Otherwise, I am not connected. Only when I get connected, then there is sorrow or whatever. If I am not connected, there is no sorrow. This tree is no problem to me because it falls down also. But if it's my garden, then it's a different thing. Oh, my tree has fallen down. Then I get connected. Immediately there is a problem. Otherwise you read a newspaper because of the storm, 1,000 trees fell. Okay, thanks. Next page. But even part of the tree of my garden falls down, then it's a different thing. Because when the problems, I mean, when I get connected, then a situation becomes problem. Atma is unconnected. What connects me with situation? This body-mind complex, my likes and dislikes, they connect me. Attachment, aversion, they connect me with everything. Even though there is no connection, the connection is established because of attachment, aversion. That's why I become actually a participant in everything. I become an issue everywhere. Etadyovatitam prahu. Here Arjuna, understand that you are not the body. You are not this mind. You are not the sense complex. Chidananda rupaha shivoham shivoham. As Shankaracharya says, mano buddhi ahankara chittayanam. It is mind, buddhi, ahankara, chittam. I am not. Nacha shrotra jikve, nacha ghananetre. The organs of perception I am not. The body I am not. The five elements I am not. Then who are you? Chidananda Rupa. I am the drashta. I am the witness. I am the illuminator. What's the nature of the drashta? The awareer. I am the awareer. What's the nature of awareer? Awareness is my nature. Chidananda Rupa. Shivoham, Shivoham. I am Chit. I am consciousness. I am Ananda. I am fullness. I am Shivaha. I am auspiciousness. This most fundamental truth is revealed in this first verse. Etadyo vetitam prahu. Understand that here two entities are involved. One is subject, other is object. The subject and object are all mixed up. So all we need to do is to separate the subject from the object. You are the subject of, I am the subject, you are all the object. I am the knower, you are all known. I am the awareer, you are all objects of my awareness. I am the subject, you are all object. Is it not so? Now what happens, you know, subject is one, the objects keep on changing. I look in this direction, they are the objects of my awareness. Look here, they are the object of awareness. What I am aware of keeps on changing. The awareer remains unchanged. So subject is one, objects are many. Objects are changing, subject does not change. Okay, subject does not change. But Swamiji, in subject also changes are there. Because when I look this side, I'm the knower of this people. I'm knower of the ceiling. I look out there, I'm knower of the tree. Even knower also undergoes changes. In that changing knower also, there is something that does not change. What is it? I. The awareer. In fact, the nature of awareness is awareness that I am, is changeless. So what is the abiding, changeless aspect of me? That I am, that I am aware, that does not change. That is called Shiva, that is auspiciousness, and that is the true nature of ourself. This is the knowledge. This is what Vedanta teaches us, that you are not what you take yourself to be. You are altogether different. You have no idea. You have no idea how great you are. You have no idea as to how infinite you are, how limitless you are, how great you are. You have no idea at all. Because of identifying with this little insignificant personality, you take yourself insignificant creature and suffer from the sense of insignificance, where there is no reason for suffering. So this is called drug drishya viveka, atma anatma viveka, viveka, the separation between atma and anatma, self and non-self. Drugdrishya separation between subject and object. That is, I, as I use today, is a union of two entities, subject and object. Remove the object part. Subject is purely awareness. And that's what you are. You are limitless. So that's what Lord Krishna teaches in the first verse. And he continues the teaching, the second verse, which will continue after our break, after our coffee break. Thank you.